Chapter 7. "Odd name at all," murmured the timber merchant, unimpressed by the news, but reminded of other things by the subject of it. "I've got to meet a gentleman this very morning, and yet I've planned to go to Sherton Abbas for the maid. I won't praise the doctor's wisdom till I hear what sort of bargain he's made," said the top sawyer. "'Tis only an old woman's tale," said Bawtry. "But it seems that he wanted certain books on some mysterious science or black art, and in order that the people hereabout should not know anything about his dark readings, he ordered them direct from London, and not from the Sherton bookseller. The parcel was delivered by mistake at the Passons, and he wasn't at home, so his wife opened it, and went into hysterics when she read them, thinking her husband had turned heathen, and told me the ruin of the children. But when he came he said he knew no more about them than she, and found they were this Mr. Fitzpiers' property. So he wrote 'Beware! Apostrophe apostrophe outside,' and sent them on by the sexton. He must be a curious young man," mused the hollow turner. "He must," said Timothy Tangs. "Nonsense," said Mr. Milbury, authoritatively. "He's only a gentleman fond of science and philosophy and poetry, and, in fact, every kind of knowledge. And being lonely here, he passes his time in making such matters his hobby." "Well," said old Timothy, "'tis a strange thing about doctors, that the worse they be the better they be. I mean that, if you hear anything of this sort about them, 10 to 1 they can cure ye as nobody else can." "True," said Bawtry, emphatically. "And for my part I shall take my custom from old Jones, and go to this one directly I've anything the matter with me. That last medicine old Jones gave me had no taste in it at all." Mr. Milbury, as became a well-informed man, did not listen to these recitals, being moreover preoccupied with the business appointment which had come into his head. He walked up and down, looking on the floor his usual custom when undecided. That stiffness about the arm, hip, and knee joint which was apparent when he walked, was the net product of the diverse strains and overexertions that had been required of him in handling trees and timber when a young man, for he was of the sort called self-made, and had worked hard. He knew the origin of every one of these cramps. That in his left shoulder had come of carrying a pollard, unassisted, from Tutcombe Bottom home. That in one leg was caused by the crash of an elm against it when they were felling, that in the other was from lifting a bowl. On many a morrow, after wearying himself by these prodigious muscular efforts, he had risen from his bed fresh as usual. His lassitude had departed, apparently forever, and confident in the recuperative power of his youth, he had repeated the strains anew. But treacherous time had been only hiding ill results when they could be guarded against, for greater accumulation when they could not. In his declining years the store had been unfolded in the form of rheumatisms, pricks, and spasms, in every one of which Milbury recognized some act which, had its consequence been contemporaneously made known, he would wisely have abstained from repeating. On a summons by Grammer Oliver to breakfast, he left the shed. Reaching the kitchen, where the family breakfasted it in winter to save house labor, he sat down by the fire, and looked a long time at the pair of dancing shadows cast by each fire iron and dog knob on the whitewashed chimney corner, a yellow one from the window, and a blue one from the fire. "I don't quite know what to do today," he said to his wife at last. "I've recollected that I promised to meet Mrs. Charman Stewart in Roundwood at 12 o'clock, and yet I want to go for grace. Why not let Giles fetch her by himself? 'Twill bring 'em together all the quicker." "I could do that, but I should like to go myself. I always have gone, without fail, every time hitherto. It has been a great pleasure to drive into Sherton and wait and see her arrive. And perhaps she'll be disappointed if I stay away." "Jan may be disappointed, but I don't think she will if you send Giles," said Mrs. Milbury, dryly. "Very well, I'll send him." Milbury was often persuaded by the quietude of his wife's words, when strenuous argument would have had no effect. This second Mrs. Melberry was a placid woman, who had been nurse to his child Grace before her mother's death. After that melancholy event, little Grace had clung to the nurse with much affection, and ultimately Melberry, in dread lest the only woman who cared for the girl should be induced to leave her, persuaded the mild Lucy to marry him. The arrangement for it was little more had worked satisfactorily enough. Grace had thriven, and Melberry had not repented. He returned to the Spar house, and found Giles near at hand, to whom he explained the change of plan. "S.G. won't arrive till 5 o'clock. You can get your business very well over in time to receive her," said Melberry. "He green gig will do for her. He will spin along quicker with that, and won't be late upon the road. Her boxes can be called for by one of the wagons." Winterburn, knowing nothing of the timber merchant's restitutory aims, quietly thought all this to be a kindly chance. Wishing even more than her father to dispatch his apple tree business in the market before Grace's arrival, he prepared to start at once. Melberry was careful that the turnout should be seemly. The gig wheels, for instance, were not always washed during winter time before a journey, the muddy roads rendering that labor useless. But they were washed today. The harness was blacked, and when the rather elderly white horse had been put in, and Winterburn was in his seat ready to start, Mr. Melberry stepped out with a blacking brush, and with his own hands touched over the yellow hoofs of the animal. "You see, Giles," he said, as he blacked, "coming from a fashionable school, she might feel shocked at the homeliness of home. And 'tis these little things that catch a dainty woman's eye, if they are neglected. We, living here alone, don't notice how the whitey brown creeps out of the earth over us. But she, fresh from a city, why, she'll notice everything." "That she will," said Giles. "And scorn us, if we don't mind." "Not scorn us. No, 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 that's only words. She's too good a girl to do that. But when we consider what she knows, and what she has seen, since she last saw us, 'tis as well to meet her views as nearly as possible. Why, 'tis a year since she was in this old place, owing to her going abroad in the summer, which I agreed to, thinking it best for her, and naturally we shall look small, just at first, I only say just at first." Mr. Melberry's tone evinced a certain exultation in the very sense of that inferiority he affected to deplore. For this advanced and refined being, was she not his own all the time? Not so Giles. He felt doubtful, perhaps a trifle cynical, for that STR, and was wound into him with the rest. He looked at his clothes with misgiving, then with indifference. It was his custom during the planting season to carry a specimen apple tree to market with him as an advertisement of what he dealt inches this had been tied across the gig, and as it would be left behind in the town, it would cause no inconvenience to Miss Grace Melberry coming home. He drove away, the twigs nodding with each step of the horse, and Melberry went indoors. Before the gig had passed out of sight, Mr. Melberry reappeared and shouted after, "Here, Giles," he said, breathlessly following with some wraps, "it may be very chilly tonight, and she may want something extra about her. And, Giles," he added, when the young man, having taken the articles, put the horse in motion once more, "tell her that I should have come myself, but I had particular business with Mrs. Charman's agent, which prevented me. Don't forget." He watched Winterburn out of sight, saying, with a jerk a shape into which emotion with him often resolved itself, "Here now, I hope the two will bring it to a point, and have done with it. 'Tis a pity to let such a girl throw herself away upon him, 1,000 pities, and yet 'tis my duty for his father's sake." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.